It's true. For a number of years, I was scared to take my insulin. And it wasn't because that specific amount of insulin was dangerous by any means, but I had recognized it was my personal threshold of comfort, right? Where if I took more than X amount of units, it felt uncertain. Didn't know if it was going to go high or low, you know, higher margin of error with larger numbers. And of course, as a certified master fitness trainer and nutritionist who lives with type 1, coaches other type 1s, you're probably thinking, Matt, why are you scared of insulin? Right? And it's not that I'm scared of insulin, it's that I've had experiences from misdosing that have made me fearful of insulin. And this is something that while I have largely gotten over this, or rather gotten through it, it's something that still is in the back of my head. Every dose that I give, like, let's double check the numbers, make sure this is the right amount. And today we're going to talk a little bit less about the time and range, the controlled numbers, and how to predict perfect blood sugar formulas and all this, and more about the subconscious mental shackles that might be holding you back, as they were for me. And the exciting part about this is that once you identify this, you open up a whole new realm of possibility where you're able to control your diabetes more intentionally. So we're going to hop into our story for today. Got a couple of them for you, actually, and a few of them are quite vulnerable. So I hope you enjoy, pull some golden nuggets out of it, and we'll hop into our theme song before we do.
I've spent the last 10 years pushing the limits while identifying trends and patterns in my type 1 diabetes management. Follow along as I learn, apply, and share the fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle strategies that I've learned from diabetes experts around the world. The real question is, how can we live fearlessly with diabetes while maintaining stable blood sugars? This podcast is here to give you the answer. My name is Matt Vandevecht, head coach and co-founder of FTF Warrior, and welcome to Part of My Pancreas.
All right, before we jump in, I gotta know if I am the only person that's aware of this threshold, or if other people are like, oh yeah, anything beyond 3 units and I get uncomfortable, right? And for me, this threshold has actually changed throughout the years. And so I'm going to get to that in a second and tell you guys exactly what my personal comfort threshold is, which how many units of insulin I feel okay with giving. And then if I give more, I get nervous. So I'll get to that a little bit later in the episode. But first, I want to tell you a story. Over the weekend, I think, what day was this? So Friday, I went on a 60-mile bike ride followed by a 5K run. We call it a brick workout in the triathlon world, where you combine two workouts to practice what you experience on race day, which is a workout followed by a workout followed by a workout, right? Where it's a swim, then a bike, and then a run. So you got to get used to running on tired legs. So the goal is to ride the 60 miles to exhaust my legs and then go run and see if I can stay standing, right? And so I was doing this, it's called a brick workout, at my parents' house because they live next to a bike path. I thought, perfect, I'll use you as home base and then I'll just take off and bike up the coast a couple times, there and back. And afterwards, you know, I set my bike at my parents' house. Actually, it's the one behind me. You can't really see it, I'm too big, but that's the bike. I was dropping it off and getting ready to go for my run. My mom was like, didn't get enough, huh? Like, you're going back out to exercise? You've been gone for 4 hours. And I was like, well, you know, I got to do this. So after I got back from my run, beat and just tired, we had a great chat when I was just kind of recuperating, drinking my water and protein shake and all that. And I said, you know, it's really interesting to me that I just completed a 60-mile bike ride and then ran 3.2 miles. And I'm okay. And that wasn't scary. It was just a workout. Whereas exactly 1 year ago, I was training for my first triathlons. I have never done endurance sports before this, by the way. Completely impulsive decision that got me into it. And now I'm training for an Ironman 70.3. It's been a wild journey so far. But I love it. And I was telling her when I was training for my first triathlon, I was actually nervous about running a single mile. In fact, I could not run a single mile. I got a half mile into it and my knee was falling apart. I was out of breath and nearly fell over because I was so tired and so out of cardio shape. I had been lifting weights, but I was just out of shape for running. And I was nervous to go for a 5-mile bike ride, right? I was like, oh, the longest I've ever ridden a bike before is like a mile or two. I'm for sure going to go low if I bike for 5 miles. Ooh, I don't know. And, you know, was very nervous through that process, but I pushed through, got through my first triathlon, which is a 10-mile bike ride on the back end of a 500-meter swim, and then you do a 5K run, 3.2. What's interesting that I was sharing with her, though, is that 5 miles scared me on a bike. But I did it because I had to. I got to 10 miles, which would scare me at that point. And then 5 miles wasn't as scary, right? And then I caught the triathlon bug, as they say. I went to train for an Olympic distance triathlon, which is, I think it's like 22 miles or something. And then 10 miles wasn't as scary, but the 22 was, right? And then I was like, let's just keep going. And I'm going to train for a half Ironman. And that, or the one I'm training for right now, is 56 miles. Whoa, right? And that used to scare me. And then in training, I was like, you know what? I want to make sure that 56 doesn't scare me. I'm going to do 60. Right, so I know I can go above and beyond. And I've recognized this trend in my life now where things that seem scary now are no longer scary once I've surpassed them, once I've overcome the challenge. And it's amazing how in that singular perspective of fear, I think that's the scariest thing. And, you know, 5 miles used to scare me on a bike. Now, I don't even consider going on a bike ride unless it's a minimum of 30 miles. So I'm like, it's not even worth my time if it's going to be a workout, right? So the first shift that I identified was overcoming challenges shows me how strong I am, how capable I am. And I know this is true with diabetes as well, which is what we're going to get into next. But I was sharing that with her as this epiphany that I had, where if I want life to feel easier, I have to do the harder things first. And then by comparison, the harder things that I have completed make my previous hard or previous fears seem ridiculous, right? Where now I'm like, I was afraid of 5 miles. I couldn't even run a single mile. Are you kidding me? Now I'm capable of XYZ. And I know this is going to continue to get better. So I'm excited for that part when I can look back and be like, I have completed a half Ironman. And who knows? Maybe someday, I don't know. Maybe some, I'm still not even, I'm hesitant to say it. Maybe someday I'll do a full Ironman. I don't know. But this concept of doing the hard things to, by comparison, make the easier things seem easier, you'll never know that what you're doing right now could be considered easy until you've done the harder things, right? And this I've seen as a trend in my life. I told my wife this years ago, found it really interesting that in high school, I thought life was difficult. I was like, oof, man, a part-time job and going to class? This is tough. And then, you know, getting into college was like, oof, two part-time jobs and being a collegiate athlete and going to class? This is tough. And then out of college, marriage is the next big step, right? Get married and I'm like, oof, having a girlfriend was easy. You just like date and make everything great for them periodically. Now you live with them as a married man, and there's a lot more to it. Marriage is kind of tough, right? And then we have a kid. We have an amazing daughter now who's 2 years old, and we're like, whew, when it was just us, that was easy. Marriage, piece of cake. Having a kid is tough. And each time you graduate to a new level, the previous level, by comparison, seems so much easier. And you're like, man, I wish I would have enjoyed the easy stage while I had it. But the key is in recognizing that now is the easy stage. It's going to get more difficult in the next phase, right? When we have two kids, that's going to be a lot more tough, right? Maybe we'll have three. I don't know. That's going to be harder. I don't know what having a teenager is like. That's probably going to be a whole new set of challenges, right? In every phase of life, this is the point of life, is to overcome challenges. And as we do so, we can look back and go, man, I had it easy. When I was only responsible for biking 10 miles, easy peasy, right? Now I have to bike 60 miles and then run after that. It's ridiculous. So recognizing the journey of life is about overcoming challenges and presenting ourselves with these difficult opportunities to really give ourselves better perspective over life. And diabetes, to me, is one of those perspectives. I was diagnosed at 19. I was in college and I was a current collegiate athlete at that point. And I remember telling my coach, was like, hey man, I got this thing called type 1 diabetes now. I don't know what this next season's going to look like. And he was like, we'll figure it out, you know? And I was lucky. I actually had a teammate who also had type 1 since he was a kid. He was like, come under my wing. I'll answer your questions. But in developing this new difficulty, this type 1 diabetes diagnosis, I recognized that life before diabetes was simple. And now I have this unique perspective where I can look at the future and say, what if life gets ridiculously complicated? What if I get a second or a third or a fourth autoimmune disease? What if I get cancer? What if I lose a limb? What if I lose my cognitive abilities, right? Whatever is next, whatever could be, means that right now is the easy time. So why am I not taking advantage of it? And that's one of the reasons I got into Ironman, or half Ironman at this point, is recognizing that there's a chance that these might be the good old days. This might be my opportunity to pursue greatness in different areas of life. Maybe I don't have the ability to compete in a half Ironman 5 years from now. Will I look back on this moment and regret not doing the things that were difficult when they're no longer even an option? So that's one unique perspective that I've pulled from this that I found really helpful in pursuing difficult things, is that one, they'll make what I currently perceive as difficult seem easy by contrast. But two, I might not have the opportunity to do difficult things down the road. So do them now, right? And with blood sugar specifically, because I like tying our lessons into blood sugars, this threshold of comfort with insulin dosing. There was a time where, a few times, that I've almost died from low blood sugars. I've had a few pretty scary run-ins with urgent hypoglycemias, sometimes in the middle of nowhere. It's been sketchy and scary. And coming on the backside of those events, I developed this severe anxiety, PTSD, panic disorder, all these things that I was diagnosed with, and life looked a little bit different during those phases of my life. And one of the phases that stood out to me was where I was fearful of insulin. I wouldn't even dose for some of my food until after. You know, I'd wait for the spike to happen and I'd be like, okay, now that I'm at 300, I can take insulin because it's quote unquote safe. I'm like, man, there's just so much uncertainty that I was afraid of. I didn't want to lose control. And I figured that since I didn't know if it was going up or down or how much insulin to take exactly, that it was just safer to do that. It's not, I didn't live a very healthy blood sugar life at that point. But what's interesting looking back is that I had comfort of threshold levels where for me at that point in my life, I was not comfortable giving more than 6 units. Okay. And for me, I'm not going to tell you my insulin to carb ratio. It doesn't matter. Even the 6 units thing doesn't matter. We're all different. We all need different amounts of insulin. We have varying amounts of insulin resistance and sensitivities. It's a whole thing. So just don't get too hung up on that. But for me, 6 units was like the max. I was like, if I take more than 6, I don't know what it's going to do. So I'm going to stick with 6. And even if it meant like I needed 7, I would take 6 and then wait like an hour and then take the 7th. And even though I'd be high and like, oh, I knew I needed that, but I didn't do it. And in fact, if you've ever noticed, or maybe just now you're noticing that there's a threshold where you're like, that's true. I'm completely confident giving 3 units or 10 units or 20 units, whatever it is for you. Oh, I'm totally confident giving this much, but add 1 unit and I get a little nervous. I would love to know that if it's you too. Because I know that there's a lot of people that have these different thresholds and think that there's this this barrier where it's not safe. And the reality is that it's not safe in your mind because you're just not used to it. You haven't encountered that difficulty yet to, by contrast, make it seem easier, right? And so with insulin, there were other phases of my life where 4 units felt like too much, and that was my threshold. 8 units felt like too much, that was my threshold. There was a phase for a number of years before I had these fearful experiences where I would take whatever the heck was necessary. You know, 25 units? Sure. I'm extra hungry today. Let's see how it goes. I was admittedly a little reckless at that point in my life. I'll have to share a story with you guys another day when I was nearly crying on the floor because I was so full, but I knew I had to keep eating because I took too much insulin. My eyes were bigger than my stomach. Anyways, I would love to know if you have identified that comfort threshold, because what's helpful for me in my life to practice is breaking through into discomfort to make sure that I'm not being held back or shackled by my mind, right? If I am nervous to take 5 units, but I'm comfortable taking 4, but the meal in front of me requires 5 units, and I know that, I've calculated it, it will work, yet I'm unwilling to give that 5th unit, even though I know full certainty I need it, that's a problem, right? That's my mind telling me that we know what the answer is, but we will not let you do that. That's what it's like to be shackled by your mind, to be held back. And it's in playing in riskier circumstances that I've found I gain bravery, confidence, and certainty, because we show ourselves what can be done. And to be fair, our brain, it's a survival instinct, this fear aspect, right? It knows there might be a potential for danger, so it avoids all possible risk associated with that. So I've had some scary urgent lows. My brain loves to remind me, you're going to go low, be careful. And I'm like, it's probably fine, you know? And by no means am I telling you to go crazy and risk everything. You know, go try and eat 5 bowls of pasta so that by contrast, 1 bowl of pasta isn't as scary. That's reckless, and I would not recommend that. But realizing that the more we settle into fear, the stronger of a grasp it gets on us. In fact, I put this in our most recent newsletter. And if you're not part of that, the Renegade Warriors newsletter, highly recommend it. I'll put a link in the description for this episode. I'll even get you access to this first one for free if you end up signing up, because I want you to have access to this piece. It's super, super important. But I titled it Using Fear as Your Guide. And the idea is that if I'm scared of something, it's a good chance that that's the thing that's holding me back from growing. Right? I went for a 1.59 mile. I'm counting the decimals because every stroke was difficult. 1.59 mile ocean swim yesterday. And on the back end of that, did a couple miles running. I don't like open water swimming at all. There's shadows beneath me. Every which one of them, my brain tells me it's a shark. It's going to eat you. there's not a whole lot of rescue opportunities. There's no lifeguards on duty because it's still winter. It's a little bit sketchy, right? And I had my dad out there with me. I was like, if I start drowning, you got a bottle of juice in your backpack. So he's on a stand-up paddleboard with me the whole time. Really great to have him. He's an amazing help. He's so supportive of my training. Just, I want to give a shout out to my dad. Through all of my triathlons, he's offered his help for either babysitting so I could train, or for accompanying me on more of the dangerous training sessions like that. But anyways, I'm scared of open water training, which is silly because I grew up surfing in the same water. But for some reason, having goggles on and being able to see all the stuff going on under the water, it's a whole different ballgame. But I knew that because I was nervous, I had to do it. Why? Because my race, which is in 3.5 weeks, is open water. We have to go out through the waves and into the ocean for 1.2 miles. So I did two things. One, I mirrored race day situations. I went first thing in the morning, got up at 5 a.m. so I could get out there before the sun, and that's what race day is going to be like, so I could also see what it's like to look into the sun from the sunrise, because it comes over the mountains into the water. And two is, I knew that if I did not do this thing that I was fearful of on race day, I would have this seed of doubt in my head. You haven't done this, it's unproven, you're gonna fail, right? So now that I've done that, and I also did more than what was required, I made it more difficult on myself. I towed a buoy behind me, so there's extra drag, which makes the swimming more difficult. But I only need to go 1.2 miles. I went 1.59, right? And that is to prove to myself that I am undeniably ready for that event. So the more difficult I make it for myself in the now, the easier it is by contrast in the future. With diabetes, the more I can navigate a chaotic, spontaneous day, the easier, by contrast and by experience, a day-to-day normalcy seems, right? If I can handle traveling around the world with blood sugars, surely I can handle hanging out in the office all day, right? Or just like a lazy Sunday. Super simple. But if all you've had are office days and lazy Sundays, then even going for a walk can feel like a threat to to our safety or to our blood sugars, right? We have to remind ourselves, remind our brains that we are capable of so many great things, but sometimes if we get ourselves locked into these safety boxes, we forget that we are capable of greatness, right? So anyways, grab that newsletter. It's in the description. I'll put it there for you, because that article that I wrote on fear, using fear as your guide, I believe is a game changer. Now, the third part of this that I want to end on, because this one's getting a little bit long, thanks for hanging out this whole time, is my sister has type 1 diabetes as well. And during one of those phases where I almost died from a low blood sugar, this one specific was from an incident outside of the city of Paris in France, by myself, small town. I didn't speak the language good enough. All I knew how to say was, j'ai besoin de sucre et je suis diabète, which is, I need sugar, I'm diabetic. Like, I looked up those phrases before I went, thank God, because I was repeating that in the hospital. I ended up going to a hospital, and it was a nightmare of an experience. Really, really scary. Knocked me off my feet, literally and figuratively. And coming back from that, I was mentally fragile. I will admit it. It's not even an admission. That was my state of being. Even my wife told me my personality changed because I was just always on edge. I was always nervous about blood sugars. What are they going to do? And this uncertainty plagued me. And I shrunk down. When you shrink down and you do this for a long time, the fear really gets a grip on you. And it is very difficult to break through that. The thing that worked best for me, I'll give you the solution before I get into the rest of the story, was baby steps. What do they call it? When you exposure therapy. So for me, that was my biggest goal, was if I'm scared of 4 units, let's take 4.01 and just start working our way past it, chipping away at those fears, right? But then one day it hit me, my sister being type 1 diabetic, I watched her dose and go. No fear, just take the insulin, get going, eat your food, have fun. And to do so fearlessly shocked me. I was like, hold on. I'm over here just an neurotic mess. I can't even count my carbs straight because I'm going a million miles an hour. Like, how many carbs, proteins, fats, what's my current blood sugar, insulin on board? What am I going to do? And she's just like, 5 minutes. Okay, let's go play volleyball and I'm going to eat while we're out there. I'm like, what? And, you know, of course she would have her highs and lows as well. But I saw her do what was necessary, not second guess herself, not live in fear, and enjoy her day. And at that point in my life, I was not enjoying any of my days. I was, like I said, a mess. I was living in fear, surrounded by fear. And I watched her just live her life, enjoy it, still eat Chinese food, still go play, you know, volleyball with her friends, go for bike rides. She works as a nurse, you know, night shifts at that point. Now she switched to day shift, thankfully. She's an ICU nurse. And just rocking life as a diabetic. And I was like, I mean, if she can do it, why can't I, right? Why am I her big brother of all things? Come on, Matt, you're supposed to be the example for her. And yet she is the example for you. And I was like, well, let's peel this apart. She didn't die. Okay. She's living her life. Yeah. And she's not being held back by fear. What's the difference here? And I realized it was my perspective. And thankfully, I have her. I don't say thankfully in this sense. I hate that she has type 1. Honestly, I'd rather have just like double type 1 diabetes if I could and take it away from her. That was one of the hardest days of my life when I found out. I'm going to start tearing up if I tell that story. But man, that was a hard day. Where was I going with that? That's a whole different topic. Ultimately, seeing her live her life, when I knew I used to live my life before I had these scary experiences, I used to be fearless as well. And to see her be fearless when I was not, first of all, it's embarrassing. I was like, come on, Matt, you're letting diabetes hold you back, and your little sister, your baby sister's crushing life. She's doing great. Why can't you do that? And it's through that proximity, the example that she set, that gave me hope and made me challenge my own mindset. Right? So sometimes we're not in a spot where we can just go do more difficult things to make the current thing seem easier by contrast, like I have been doing with my training, right? Not everyone's in that position. At that point in my life, I was not. I was not ready to go train for triathlons, or even eat a meal without being fearful. Now, if you're not ready to make things more difficult for yourself intentionally to make the end result easier, the hack that I've found is proximity to others who are doing better than you or more than you. Not that they are better than you, they're just doing better, right? And it was her example that really forced me to challenge myself on the current situation. It's like, why am I living in fear? Why am I stuck when my little sister is doing her absolute best life right now? So the proximity of people who are doing more or doing better than you at life, or especially doing more or better in the thing that you want at life, allows you to zoom out and gain perspective. And that perspective for me allowed me to see that maybe I could live a little bit more freely. Maybe I could enjoy food again. Maybe I could go for bike rides again. I was scared to leave the house, you guys. It was a really dark time in my life. Like, I was legitimately scared to leave the safety of the cupboards that were full of sugar. I didn't go anywhere without like 300 grams of sugar in my backpack, okay? It was bad. I was a mess. And having an example set for me to show me what was possible allowed me to gain that perspective, open my eyes really to seeing how trapped I was by my diabetes. And there's multiple phases in my life where that comfort threshold we talked about of how much insulin I feel comfortable taking has changed. At that point in my life, it was 6 units. It's also shifted to 4 units. It's also shifted to 8 units. And for different reasons or another, sometimes I had to eat more, like with my training, right? But even now, I look at my doses and I've still got a comfort threshold, right? And it's better now than it has been in the past, but that still exists. There's still that protective mechanism in my head that's like, well, don't take too much insulin, right? You don't want a repeat of the Paris incident. And so it's not that we have to live in the absence of fear. And I dropped this in the newsletter too. I think this is a powerful statement. Living fearlessly with type 1 diabetes isn't removing all fear. Fear is healthy. Fear keeps us alive, right? It keeps us on edge and aware of the potential threats to our life. It's a good thing to have, but oftentimes the fear dial is turned up a bit too high. We're fearful of things that aren't really necessary. You know, we're fearful of like social rejection. What are they going to think of me? I used to be I used to be scared of public speaking. I was terrified of it. And so those things aren't really helpful, right? It's a different discussion entirely. But fear and living fearlessly with type 1 diabetes does not mean removing fear. It means facing your fear, being brave, right? And to not let it hold you back. And you know, of course, be safe about it. None of this is medical advice. I should always say that. Do what's best for you. But I've found that it's not about removing the fear as I thought it was, which puts a huge burden on us because you can't remove fear. You just can't. It's about living with the fear and doing it anyways, right? I was scared of that open water swim. Honestly, we stood in the parking lot for a solid 15 minutes before I went in. And my dad was like, everything okay? And I was like, just stretching. Give me like 5 minutes. And finally we went out there and like, all right, let's go. I was also making sure my blood sugars were okay. Cause you know, if you're out there for an hour or something, you gotta be careful with blood sugar since there's not a lot of assistance and CGMs don't work underwater. But doing it anyways, right? Identifying those fears and picking apart the useful ones from the not so useful ones, and then challenging the not so useful ones, and then doing the hard thing so that by comparison, by contrast, your current life becomes the easy version, and then living your best life, right? So this episode went a couple different directions. I hope it was still helpful, but the goal here is to reset your perspective, right? To not shrink into fear, or to recognize, like most of us, if you have already shrunk into fear, if there are insulin dosing thresholds that you're uncomfortable moving past because you're uncertain, that means there's a knowledge gap, right? If you don't know what to expect, and maybe it's time to focus some time and energy on your diabetes. And that's exactly why we have that newsletter that goes out every single month with updated strategies, mindset pieces. Like I said, this current one is called Fear is Your Guide. It's really important to face your fears, but also looking at what's working for our clients so you can copy what's already working and not have to be the renegade yourself, but join in with other renegades who are already experimenting with blood sugars and proving the path for you. So you can just go, oh, this worked. I'm going to pull from that and plug it into my life. Oh, this one did not work. Let's remove that so that I don't have to suffer and learn the hard way, right? So I said this earlier too. I'll put the link in the description for you guys to go check it out. And anybody who's signing up, I want to get you access to that article on me. I'm going to cover that for you because that's a powerful article. But the big picture here is that fear, it's a part of all of our lives. It's still a part of my life. There are things that I am scared of, but I do it anyway, as much as I can. I'm not the best at acting fearlessly. There are still some things that I am personally held back by with fear, but that's something that I choose to pursue. I found that when I face my fears, they get smaller. They're less of a threat. And oftentimes on the back end of doing something that was hard, doing something that was fearful or that I was fearful of, it doesn't look that scary anymore. It's like you come up to a campfire in a cave and there's this big shadow, and I'm gonna eat you. And then you go face the fear of the big scary shadow, and it's like a little teddy bear on the side of the fire pit that was just casting a large shadow, right? And you're like, oh, I can handle a teddy bear. Good thing I faced this fear, because if I didn't face it, my fear would have grown. There's a big creature over there. I can't go to the campfire ever. And you'd be shivering over in the corner all the rest of your life because you're afraid of facing the fear. Life gets so much better when we can uncover those false fears and overcome them. So this is more of a mindset lesson, more of an epiphany that I had. But I wanted to share those three stories with you, especially with my sister, the proximity, right? Where she was able to show me just by living her life, by the way, she was not shoving this down my throat or like telling me I have to improve, be better. She was just living her life. And my proximity with her, somebody who was better or doing more than me, allowed me to change my perspective and to get more out of my own life. And you know, this is why we have communities, right? You're probably on a social media platform right now, whether it's Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, X, or whatever, TikTok. There's so many out there, but a lot of them have a disconnect. It's difficult to connect with the right people. Sometimes there are groups that are more rooted in fear and motivated by fear, and that can drag you down a notch. So it's important to be really cautious about who you surround yourself with, because if my sister was somebody who was also restricted and did not challenge the norms or live her best life, I would never have been inspired to do so either, right? I might have been stuck in that for the rest of my life, never experiencing all that life has to offer. So please do carefully select who you surround yourself with. This is why we vet people that come into our programs and into our communities, even into our newsletters. You know, people that are not the right fit, we respectfully remove them and recommend other resources because we want to protect that proximity, that life shortcut where you're able to surround yourself with people who are all on the same path moving forward. So just know that if you ever join one of our circles, you know, whether it's a program with me coaching you, or maybe it's one of our community like the Warriors Tribe Plus, or even the Renegade Warriors newsletter, know that if you're not a good fit, we'll recommend something that might be. And what's better, that if you are a good fit, you're going to be surrounded by people just like you who are also on a similar path that you can learn from. So that's all I got for you guys today. I got some more difficult things to plan for as I prep for this half Ironman. And I hope you find something that's difficult that you get to overcome. It's one of the greatest feelings ever. And diabetes is included in that, by the way. We overcome this disease every day. We choose to fight it, which is always why I tell you to keep up the fight. Whether you're on YouTube or a different platform, use the link in the description. Use that to get around the right people, to learn the right strategies, to challenge your own false beliefs or fear patterns, and to level up, get to a place where you get to live more of life and see how it can be manipulated to be easier than it currently is. And I'll catch you guys next week. Keep up the fight.